From Lake Wasota, once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
Good morning. This is Up North News. Luke is staffing the turntable here, and every so often you have to put the needle down a second time. Have you ever actually played an actual player where you put the needle on a piece of vinyl? No?
Like, maybe once.
Wow.
Maybe once.
This hurts.
I don't need the ageism, all right? I'm young. Leave me be. The ageism. I can't handle it.
Evan, they gave me a producer in his 20s. Is that fair to do to somebody who's chasing 60 on the horizon here?
Nah, Pat. I feel you, though. I have young staff that, you know, all they do is Google Docs and things I don't understand. It's hard. Change is hard.
Yeah. And look, they've turned me into that guy. I didn't want to be the get off my lawn guy, but this is what we've come to.
It's inevitable.
We are talking with Representative Goyke about legislative races and legislative matters. And I did want to ask one more. It's a little inside baseball on campaigning, but this is going to be an inside baseball show, folks. So get used to it. I remember, especially when Howard Dean was running for president back in the day and talking about the 50 state strategy and don't leave any states off the table simply because, you know, they're traditionally red states. You got to fight everywhere. So there's a lot of people that have said at the state level, you know, that for the assembly where there's 99 seats in the Senate, there's 33. So in the assembly, it's like we should have a 99 district strategy and have 99 candidates. And I would argue that that's a nice thing to have, but, you know, resources are much more finite at the state level. So there are not 99 Democratic candidates, but perhaps you disagree and think that you should be playing in every district, no matter how gerrymandered and red it is.
Yeah, and we do try. I mean, there is no, I've been in the assembly for 10 years now. That's 5 election cycles. And every single one of those, we've tried to fill out Democratic candidates in every single district we can. And the Republicans do too. I have a constituent that called me and said, hey, I got a call from a Republican staffer saying I should run against you as a Republican in a heavily Democratic seat, but that they would help. So both sides do this. And there's, I think, some wisdom to it. I think it helps to have candidates all the way down ballot. We had in our last segment the power of one-on-one communication at people's doors. So I think this year we have well over 80 contested or 80 Democrats running of the 99. So, and that includes deep red seats where, you know, proud Democrats have put their name on the ballot. The outcomes from that are incredibly important. And let me give you an example. The western suburbs near me in Milwaukee, in 2012, the year I got elected, we had two Dems running and they got absolutely trounced. This is gerrymandered district, 60-40 GOP win. But we were able to see, because they ran, some cracks in that gerrymander in various neighborhoods of some of the inner suburbs. And that's where the organizing took place the next year and the next year and the next year. We flipped red to blue in 18, one of those seats. We flipped the other one in 2020. So having Dems on the ballot, you know, really helps provide data and an understanding of what that community is. Pat, you shared the story of going to certain communities within your Senate district. So the only way you know what's going on the ground is to be on the ground. And to do that in the legislative races, you need a candidate.
And the more, you know, the other thing it does is, of course, every extra voter that's motivated helps the top of the ticket, so that if Tony Evers, you know, wins by 3 votes, every state rep is going to, you know, or every candidate is going to say, well, yeah, it was the 3 cousins that voted for me, you know, because I decided to run in Waukesha County. They wouldn't have voted anyway.
That's right. They felt a bit disenfranchised. They hadn't seen a Dem show up for a while. I was brave to go to the end of the cul-de-sac and knock that door. And lo and behold, 4 votes came out. You're absolutely right.
The margin, you know, it doesn't matter what part of the state, it's still the margin. Representative Evan Goyke is talking with us and talking about Governor Evers running for re-election. He obviously has some issues and points and even achievements that he wants to run on. The Lincoln Hills Juvenile Detention Facility has, you know, been a blight on Wisconsin for a number of years. It is well behind any kind of court order to close and put a better model in place. But there is finally some progress being made on that front?
Yeah, so this has been one of the most important issues I've worked on in my career. And actually, the legislature has come together and passed legislation to bring the facility in Lincoln County to a close. We've gotten snagged on funding the correct network of replacement facilities. You can't just go and close that facility without a better place to put those kids, right? The point of this endeavor is to improve juvenile justice in Wisconsin, not just close one facility and open another just like it. And so the progress that has been made on Tuesday, Governor Evers and the Department of Corrections under his leadership announced arriving at a location in Milwaukee. It's likely that the city council in Milwaukee will vote in favor of that tomorrow. That's required under state law for this particular project. And then it's up to the Joint Committee on Finance to help a couple of county projects go forward. And it is possible that a week or so from now, we could have in place all of those additional facilities that would bring Lincoln Hills to a close. And it's a increased mental health, increased local county-run facilities, and a new modernized.
I think we've got a freeze on Representative Goyke, unless it's a freeze on me, which is always a possibility.
Would really catch us up. This would really catch us up to the rest of the country and what folks are doing.
Okay. My apologies, folks, if you heard any kind of a glitch. I'm going to assume it was from way up here in Chippewa Falls and not Milwaukee, but we're back on the same page together here as well. So in terms of getting things done, that's one thing that, you know, the governor is going to point to in his reelection effort. I think the other, though, is just the way that he has put federal aid to work, pandemic relief, in so many different ways. Now, this obviously has been rubbing Republicans in the legislature the wrong way, that you know, this federal relief package authority was given exclusively to governors in the state. And not every governor has used it the same way, but Governor Evers is getting a lot of praise for the various ways that he is putting that relief into the state economy in so many different areas. Which ones do you particularly point to and say there's something we got done that wouldn't have gotten done if we were solely dependent on a Republican-controlled budget?
So I think the governor's had a laser focus on small businesses and helping entities that were cut off from their normal business model during COVID. It's just really incredible just what he, the Department of Administration, the WEDC, they just really focused on mitigating the economic impact. And that's why we have a big surplus in part and why we had as little economic disruption as possible. One comment I wanted to make, Pat, you know, the Republicans, you're hearing all of Ron Johnson's ads about reckless federal spending and that's behind inflation. And you're going to hear legislative Republicans say the same garbage. I just want to remind listeners that Republicans introduced bills to spend more than the federal money than we had. They couldn't make up their mind. They wanted to spend it. They spend it twice. Almost two times as much federal aid as was actually given to Wisconsin, the Republicans tried to spend in various different bills. So we were very, very fortunate to have Governor Evers. Look, I mean, I think he had programs that targeted rural Wisconsin and farming communities, and he had initiatives that targeted my urban neck of the woods and housing, you know, keeping people in their homes. I mean, it's pretty incredible just how robust and thorough his federal relief aid was spread around the state. We're lucky to have it.
And it was not the federal relief aid was not intended to be a substitute for state spending and state investments. It was meant to be a supplement, you know, a replacement where possible because of, you know, dire economic conditions. But it leads me to that state budget surplus. There was a decent size surplus projected before COVID hit. And then, of course, the bottom fell out from the economy. And then the recovery has happened, managed differently in every state. But again, because of what Governor Evers has done, we've been doing that well enough that we have not just a healthy surplus. We have a large budget surplus here that could be put to work in so many ways. doesn't have to be necessarily new spending. It can be making areas. But Republicans won't do that. They're sitting on billions of dollars until next January, when I firmly believe the correct word for this is a heist. We are in the middle of a heist from taxpayers who don't know it yet, but they are this close to having about $5 billion taken from them. They'll get some of it back, but by and large, it will be put in the form of tax cuts geared toward the wealthy. That's certainly my thought, that, that that's what's at play here, what's at risk, especially if Evers loses. How do you see the surplus that remains behind lock and key in the Republican caucus?
Yeah, I think you're right, Pat. Two areas of major focus for me, and I think many of my colleagues, will be our public school system. This current state budget, you know, under the guise that federal aid came to public school districts, Republicans underfunded. You made the correct point earlier. The federal aid wasn't meant to be replacement of state aid, and that's exactly how Republicans treated federal aid to school public school districts. So huge, huge cracks coming to bear in public education funding, and part of this money really needs to go to catch districts up from the last year and a half. The UW system has been chronically underfunded for the last decade, you know, received some major cuts and has had tuition freezes. And so, you know, part of that, I think, is gonna really, the part of that surplus really need to go to catch up, where we've been less and less competitive with our national peers. I think there's great, great danger in the Republicans going towards a flat tax or some kind of reduced progressivity in our income tax structure. A flat tax would increase taxes for working people living on the margins of poverty and decrease taxes substantially to those highest income earners. It would punch a hole in our future state budgets. My son is 14 months old. By the time he's graduating high school, we would still be reeling from the lost revenue and lost investment in public institutions if we go down that route.
One last topic that I want to hit before we run out of time here, and it's not an easy one for you, but I want to ask, you know, how you think Democrats can handle this. And that's the whole, you know, soft on crime notion, because you have in Governor Evers somebody who has paroled many people who have turned their lives around, has pardoned many people who have turned their lives around, proved to be a benefit to society. You just talked about Lincoln Hills and turning what was just straight up incarceration into actual treatment, mental health care, things like that. But it will mean, you know, fewer juveniles are behind bars, and always the risk that, you know, you get that one bad apple out there. So it leads to, obviously, what is going to be in Republican ads. It's already in Republican ads. How do you get that message out that treatment and reform is still better than just lock them up and throw away the key for everybody?
It's incredibly hard. And, you know, crime is real. People are victimized, and we can't lose sight of that. So my first strategy is, let's not pretend that this isn't a serious issue or that people aren't hurt. And see and hear and recognize that victimization. But we have to uplift the stories, and there are stories that abound of people that have turned their life around. So locally in Milwaukee, I've done a lot of work with different organizations that they call it Correct the Narrative, where they kind of really do the hard work of highlighting how individuals that have been incarcerated have turned their life around and become, you know, law-abiding, productive citizens. We just need to continue to amplify those stories and invest in those programs that work.
Yeah, I mean, second chances are real, not just because you know somebody personally and can vouch for it. There's plenty of it around there. State Representative Evan Goyke, we talked during the break. Next time around, we'll play a game of music confessions, where we, you know, reveal what's on our phones, our little guilty pleasure for songs. Think about that for next time.
All right.
But in the meantime, you've got enough to do just chasing the little guy around. So thanks for spending some time with us. Best of luck to you, and we'll talk again real soon.
Thank you for having me.
All right. We will wrap up this hour's conversation next. You're up north.